Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. I am one of your hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, on the way to the lobby to get some snacks is...
Let's all go to the lobby. All right, Billy Crash.
I'm actually doing the dance in my seat while
you're... So was I. I'm getting my exercise for today.
It's like, why couldn't I be an anthropomorphic popcorn box or
something?
Yeah,
that's
like that?
Just what I was thinking, man. Shit.
In any case, tonight we are going to talk about, and maybe we could call it our Life During COVID-19 series. April 23rd, which is when we're recording this, Pennsylvania is still shut down. There are tentative plans to reopen, do a slow reopen of certain parts of the state. On May 5th, we'll see if that actually happens. But you know, one of the things that happened, you know, right when things started to ramp up with COVID-19. Was businesses started to close, the so-called non-essentials, and one of the first things to be considered, you know, a possible health hazard was your friendly local movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And for obvious reasons, you know, it's like a confined congregation of people, and you know, you could see that there, you know, I could understand the possible health concern over that. You know, as much as I didn't want to sort of give up that theatrical experience, I kind of understood the reasoning behind it. We want to talk about, I was like saying to Bill, let's talk about our favorite experiences at the movies. Let's talk about what we want or what we like to get out of going to the movies, you know, making that specific trip for that specific purpose.
Sex.
Well, that too, you know, the bottomless popcorn bucket.
Well, hey, whatever you're into.
I always thought when they talked about the bottomless popcorn bucket, it was like a Twin Peaks thing where you kind of look into the bucket and it's like a swirling abyss that you're going to fall into and go to the Black Lodge or something. I don't know.
Dude, let's go.
I'd like to be in the Black Lodge right about now.
Oh, man. And it's really also the White Lodge. They're intertwined. We know that.
Right, right. So, you know, I love going to the movies, but thinking about this topic made me wonder, you know, why do I like that so much? What do I get out of it? I was thinking, since that's currently a luxury that everybody's deprived of right now, those who enjoy going to see movies, I thought it would be an interesting thing for us to just sit back and kind of reminisce and maybe touch upon some influential moments in our lives. And Billy?
Yes.
I hand it over to you.
Good. And before I go, I'm glad you brought this up, because Vicki Spiegel, you know, a co-writer of that I've worked on many things with, and a beautiful person, she goes to the theater once a week to see a movie.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and now she's completely deprived, and which sucks. And one of the things that I was thinking when you brought up this idea is my horror movie experiences, because sometimes people ask the question, what was the first movie that got you into horror?
Yeah.
And now, I grew up on Godzilla movies, and I never saw one of them in a theater. I watched them on, we had this thing in the New York City area called the 4:30 movie on ABC, mm-hmm. and they had Godzilla week. And that was the only time my mom would allow me not to eat dinner at the table, and I could sit in front of the TV in the living room and watch Godzilla movies. And
nice.
Yeah, and to this day, when Godzilla does his, you know, special little scream, what little hair I have on the back of my neck does stand up. But but the first horror experience actually wasn't in a theater. It was in something that's much more rare, if there could be such a thing as more rare, is a drive-in theater.
Oh, okay. Yeah, awesome.
So I was like seven, So this is roughly, it had to be 71, 72. We went to the Route 3 drive-in, which became the Route 3 flea market and is now a bunch of crappy business office buildings in the Meadowlands. But it was always cool driving past because they had this super giant screen, and as you're driving, you could watch a movie. But we went to the drive-in, and as always, it was a double feature. We're in my dad's 69 Plymouth Satellite, which was like a friggin' carved out of pure steel. The thing was awesome. And we watched a movie called The Red Tent, which is a drama and is still disturbing to me in some ways.
Sean Connery?
I don't know if he was in The Red Tent.
Okay, all right.
But the other part of the double feature was my first true foray into horror, and that was The Legend of Boggy Creek. Did you ever see it?
You know what? I haven't, but I know you wrote about it a long time ago in
Yeah,
Crash
oh,
Palace. Yeah.
yeah, I did. I had to because saw this movie. It's a Bigfoot movie, Bigfoot in the Swamp, and I'll never forget. Yeah, I hate a particular scream too. Sound is what always gets me in horror movies. Visuals, no. Sound, you do sound right, and I'm in. The Bigfoot was like everywhere. I remember this one guy, he's on a toilet and Bigfoot's arm comes ripping through the window, and it's like, holy crap. So I'm a little kid, I'm freaked out. So I'm in the back seat of this boat car that we have, and my legs are on the seat because I know Bigfoot is under my dad's seat because I always sat behind my dad when we drove, and I knew that he was just going to grab me by the ankles and take me off into Netherland and kill me and eat me. And I'm crying watching the movie. I get home. For 3 days I cried. My mom kept the light on, the door open, and all this and that. So, as was the case when I was a little kid, I'm totally freaked out by this movie. Freaked out. Bigfoot's everywhere. He's in the closet. He's under the bed. All this shit. He's on the way to school. Like, I mean, he's just giant and lurking and all that crap. So, I was on the bottom end, the bottom of a bunk bed. At night, indelibly, I'd have to pee, and I'd be like, no, I don't want to get up because he's gonna grab me from under the bed, and all this crap, and even with the light on, and I would fly out of bed, I would jump out of bed and run to the bathroom, urinate, and go jumping back in. Well, one night, because I was like really freaked out, and I was gonna take my mad leap into my bed, but I overshot. I went too high and like smashed my head into the upper part of the bunk bed, and I saw stars. But it was funny because I only watched that movie maybe 2, 3 years ago for the second time since I first saw it, and I was bored. I was like laughable, and the theme music was so abysmal, and I'm like, this was the movie that had me crapping in my pants for no reason. But the cool thing was, it was one of those old time drive-ins. You didn't get stuff through the radio. Yeah, I had to pull up next to a post that you hope had a speaker that worked. And
That's right, yeah.
oh man, but yeah, that freaked me out.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, Bill. I mean, I know I've been to a drive-through, and there's apparently a lot of chatter about the potential of drive-throughs seeing a resurgence.
Drive-through drive-in.
Okay. I'm thinking about dinner, Bill. Come on,
I know, I
please.
could tell, man.
Anyway, drive-ins getting a resurgence because, well, that's actually a place where you're just naturally socially distant from people, you know?
Except for ho hopefully the soon-to-be naked person next to you in the car. If you're not doing a family thing, I mean, you're not going to go see like Little Mermaid and like hope to get any.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, they would probably have to either close down the snack bar or just like put plexiglass up like they're doing at the grocery stores now, if they wanted to run the snack bar. But you know, it's just I like that idea. And there's one that's like literally 10 minutes away from where I'm living now, and I've just never been there. It's
What are
still
you doing,
operational.
man?
Yeah, it's still operational during the warm weather months. So it's like I just haven't gotten around to it. So maybe this year I think I might be jonesing for a theatrical experience, and that's one I know I haven't had in many years. I
It's
know our
fun,
family
man.
went, but I was probably way too little to remember a damn thing about anything I might have seen. So And you know, Bill, another thing is like the era you're talking about for horror movies. The MPAA was, you know, The Legend of Boggy Creek was a G-rated movie by those 1970s standards.
Yeah, when stuff was cool and they didn't give the whole movie's plot away in a little box that comes with whatever rating they give it.
Yeah.
I hate that. As soon as I see that, I turn my head because I don't want to know anything. Because they totally, I forgot what movie it was, but they totally ruined it by having, there's rape in the movie. And that was a real key element to the story and the plot.
Yeah.
And it actually ruined it because you were like waiting for it the whole movie. And it's like, oh, this was supposed to be the big shock. And everything the story turns on, but you just totally ruined it. It was disgusting. I hate the MPAA.
Well, and you think about like when we were growing up, Bill, like even when I was growing up, the content descriptors, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, but
Weren't any.
yeah, there weren't any. You just kind of had to, it was more like you or your parents kind of had to go by their gut based on like the advertising or the reviews or the TV spots or whatever to determine, okay, maybe little Billy or little Johnny is okay to see this. We'll make an exception for this R-rated movie. But my point is, like, Boggy Creek was rated G, like other stuff, like The Omega Man was a PG movie. It would probably be an R-rated movie by today's standards. You know, it's just like it was more lenient back then, so you probably had more opportunities to see horror movies that were getting like a PG rating because the sensibility of the times was so, I don't know, there was a grittier edge to it. So maybe people were like, oh, you know, I can take this, you know, or my kid can take this because we're living through tough times or whatever. So like by the time I got, you know, came of age in my teens, it was like, you know, I can't really remember seeing like specifically horror movies when I was particularly like young, like my preteen days, because I feel like most of the stuff I wanted to see was like R-rated, and I know my parents wouldn't go for it.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, you know, so I, you know, I'll use this example because it was a first for me. There was a theater in the mall in Southern York County. It used to be called the Delco Plaza, so it was like the strip mall, and there was a good comic book store in there. Which still exists as its own building now, called Comics Connection. But there was also this I think four screener theater called I think it was like a United Artists or something like that. But it was kind of like a nice, you know, it was like a charming place, you know, and it was close to Halloween or it was like the weekend of Halloween or something like that. I was 17 years old and John Carpenter's Vampires had just come out. So, you know, I was currently within the first month of dating my first girlfriend at the time. And, you know, I called up my best friend and he came out, you know, so we all met at the in the parking lot and we were all kind of in some variation of stupid costume because of the, you know, tis the season. And the guy who was at the ticket booth was kind of funny because he was dressed like in a monk's outfit, but he had like dark circles under his eyes. He might have been painted up like a zombie or something like that. So, you know, we go in and we sit down and, you know, the theater is pretty crowded for this. And I was excited because it was the first John Carpenter film I was going to be seeing in a theater, and it had James Woods before he became, you know, the James Woods we know today. Or maybe he was always like that, I don't know.
Probably.
But yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. But in any case, we kind of sat there, and I think all of us walked out of the theater and we were like so disappointed by it. People, I think, you know, I remember people, I don't really remember any noteworthy reactions people had while we were sitting there watching it.
Yeah, I hated it, actually.
You know, and the funny thing is, I rewatched it recently and I was like thinking, you know, well, is it because I was a kid and I'd watched a couple Carpenter flicks like The Thing, Halloween, probably seen Assault on Precinct 13 at that point. I was thinking, is it because I put so many expectations on this movie that I walked out disappointed by it? And I rewatched it recently with a pretty open mind, and I was like, no, it really is not. It's not a good movie. Even if you try to view it as a Western, which Carpenter has frequently described that film as,
Oh boy.
it doesn't even work. It doesn't work. It's
Yeah.
It was kind of like a missed opportunity, and I could rabbit trail about that, but I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of like a disappointment. It's cool to go into an R-rated movie to be 17 and go into an R-rated movie by yourself without having your parents come along. That's pretty cool. But it's just kind of like, oh, well, I guess they can't all be winners then.
Nah, I know what you mean, man. I know what you mean, but I'm lucky, man. I hit winners after friggin' Legend of Boggy Creek. And this movie scared the hell out of me too. It was 1978, and there was this new movie that, of course,
Oh,
I
I
was
think I
young. I
know.
didn't know it was a remake. It was one of the greatest remakes ever made. Was Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And which is great because it's a really dark movie. And saw it with my dad and my brother. My mom wouldn't go at this theater called the Lincoln Theater in Kearny, New Jersey. We called it the Stinkin' Lincoln because as soon as you walk in, your feet would be stuck to the floor because they never cleaned it. But at that time, before it became a triplex, and then they had to change the name because people thought it was triple X, so people were going there for porn.
That's why the floor was sticky, Bill. Come on.
Yeah. Well, this was before that. This is when it had a super giant screen. It was an old theater converted. The ceiling had, it looked like a flower. It had this round centerpiece, and all of these layers of fabric came off of it. My dad said when the building was old, back in the day before air conditioning, they would let that fill up with water in the summer and it would keep the place cool. And I was like, okay. And so just super giant screen. And I almost ran out of the movie. I was 13. I almost
Oh
ran
my
out
God.
because, and it still gets me when I watch it. I mean, the movie's hopeless, which is great for horror. It's one of my favorite horror films ever made. I watch it all the time. It's shot beautifully, but it's kept very dark. And even the daylight, it's like there's clouds. It's just like not good. And
Ominous, yeah.
yeah, and the great when the scene with Donald Sutherland, I know this is a spoiler, but if you haven't seen this great movie at this point, I don't know what to tell you. But he takes this garden hoe and he crushes in his imitation, and he's hacking up its head, and that just freaked me out. And I remember actually turning my head and like was gonna run out, but I didn't. And the movie was wild, it was intense, and really actually very disturbing. And so that was like my first,
Like a mature horror film, kind of.
that was the one.
And that's kind of interesting, Bill. I swear I'm not trying to sound like Jack Valenti here, but again, that was 1978. That was a PG horror. That was a PG movie, and I don't think there's any way that would be rated PG by today's standards.
No.
By the sensibility of the MPAA, as it's called now.
Puritanical, conservative, bullshit, spineless motherfuckers, yes.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, you had some opportunities, I think, that I didn't really have when I was growing up, because the system had kind of that sort of system had changed so much, and I mean just the society had changed, kind of, or evolved, or whatever you want to call it. Like, just things had happened, things had changed, and that influenced the sensibility of filmmakers and what was popular in those certain periods.
Yeah, you're right, because just a year later, Alien came out. That was rated R, and my parents wouldn't let me see it.
Oh, really?
And so I never saw my favorite horror film, even during the anniversary and all that crap. I've never seen it in the theater on a big screen.
Yeah, that's like, no, I would love, I haven't seen it on a big screen either, and I would love to see that one. That would be great.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Frickin' put that in an IMAX or something. Man, could you imagine? Ugh.
Yes, I can.
I mean, could you imagine the sound? You'd feel like you were on that ship with those poor doomed fools.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's cool, Bill. And I love your stories describing the actual the Cineplex. That's awesome. Well, I have some bad experiences, but I think I might save those, or not talk about them at all. But they might be good. But this might be an obvious choice, but back in 2007, the movie that was like getting everybody excited, I feel like at least in the horror community, was Grindhouse. And I mean, I was one of those people because I at that point I was reading my Fangoria pretty religiously each month. So I was they were interviewing Robert Rodriguez and they were interviewing Tarantino about what they were planning to do and what they were hoping to accomplish with this. And I just remember going to the theater and that this was like a mall multiplex that I went to see it, full of people. The movie starts, with the fake scratches and everything. And it starts off, kicks off with the trailer for Danny Trejo as Machete. And it's just like everybody was, it was one of the greatest film going experiences of my life, just because everybody was synced into the rhythm of the film from the start.
Nice, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was just fantastic, And at the time, this sort of set the ball rolling for all these other filmmakers to just do these effects kind of in their movies. So it's kind of been overdone to a pretty severe degree, I think. So, but just sitting there watching Planet Terror with all the scratches, the deliberately over the top acting, the reel missing, and the way it starts up again. It was just like so good the way he did it. Everybody was like hooting and yelling and hollering, and I think that is what the two of them were talking about in interviews. They kind of wanted to replicate this experience that had fallen by the wayside with the advent of the multiplex, kind of. When you got away from those individual theaters or like the one screener theaters that would just be a huge room. So yeah, unfortunately, I think it was a good strategy on Dimension's part or whoever made this decision to put Planet Terror first, because that is easily the better of the two movies.
Absolutely.
And then when you have those couple phony trailers, which are a lot of fun, and everybody was hooting at those, and I'll stay on records. I'll go on record saying that Thanksgiving, the fake trailer, is the best thing Eli Roth has ever done.
Can't argue. Can't argue that.
Can't stand any of his features, but that fake trailer is gold. But then I think what happens, thinking back on it, is that the strategy was probably to get people hyped up with Planet Terror and get the adrenaline pumping so they could come down a little bit with Death Proof, which I think is a self-indulgent, very Tarantino-y. It's got some good stuff in it, but for the most part, it is a severe contrast to Planet Terror. And I don't think that was by design. I think it was more Tarantino's sensibility. He still wanted to do his, 10-minute long dialogue scenes, kind of.
Yeah, that was
And
real dragged out, man.
it was. And I mean, despite the fact that the car chase at the end is fantastic and Kurt Russell is fantastic for the screen time he has in it.
Hey, DJ, where's the bear? Sorry.
Yeah, this car is 100% death proof, but to get the benefit, honey, you really got to be sitting in my seat. So it was like when he was on the screen, it was awesome, and the car chase was great, but it just was like, yeah, it was very much a Tarantino kind of. I and this is another rabbit trail I'm not going to go down, but I feel like his movies have gotten increasingly unbalanced in terms of the disconnect between the action and the suspense and just endless scenes of people talking. But that's something for a dissertation. But the bottom line is Grindhouse, even with Death Proof not quite bringing the adrenaline rush that Planet Terror did, I still love that theatrical experience. That was, seeing it for the first time with that crowd was just really just a special moment, and it was totally worth it, I thought. So,
Oh, that's awesome, man.
yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I have a great one, because we were just talking about the master of horror himself, John
Oh,
Carpenter.
yes.
So it's 1980. Is it 80 or 82?
82, I think,
It's
Bill.
82. I have two stories from 82, and this
First
is
goddamn week of winter.
first goddamn week of winter. So my dad, my brother, and I are back at the stinking Lincoln. They still have the giant screen. They still have the drapery and from the roof and all this stuff. And we go there to see The Thing. And holy mother, we were freaking out. Because me, my dad, my God, my dad was in his 30s then. My dad was a man, an adult. I'm still not even a quarter of the adult my dad was. And he'd be sitting there like, "Oh, did you see that? Oh, wow, whoa!" That was like going nuts, And we were all freaking out, like, "Holy shit!" We never saw amazing effects like this before. And again, this was a hopeless story. It's like,
Oh, yeah.
as soon as it starts, you're like, "Up, oh, they're all gonna die." It's just like, just like, this is going nowhere, And John Carpenter totally gave us the big foreshadow. You see this giant cliff face? Yep, you can't get up it. That means my guys aren't getting out. And it was like, oh my God. And the sound with this movie, oh man. And like, it was relentless, and it was cool, and it was just like potent. And I remember being in a theater, and it wasn't as crowded as I thought it should be. And 1982 was like the year for movies. For like you trace back to the 1 year, in like the past 3 decades, it would be 1982. And I think it would have came out a week after that ET thing or something.
It was around the same time, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like everybody was watching that. To this day, I refuse to watch ET. I could give two shits. And I mean, that was like the rave. And I know at the time John Carpenter was upset that his fans didn't go out to see this movie. But I did, and my family did. My mom was like, "I'm not gonna watch that," and we went, and it was an absolute blast to see that on a giant screen. Was just phenomenal, and it rocked, and it was every second was awesome. And to this now, I mean, I watch it like 3-4 times a year on average, maybe more.
Oh,
I
yeah.
just I just watched it. I just watched it again, like, a month ago. And never gets old. I love it, and it's just a total blast. But to see it in that theater and have killer seats, and friggin' these alien creations, like, bigger than a house, was awesome.
Bill, how do you remember anything about how, were there some other people in there while you were watching it? Do you remember how they were reacting, or do you just mostly remember how you and your brother and your dad were reacting to it?
From what I remember, people were quite stoic. I don't remember people freaking out. I don't even remember if they applauded at the end of it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I've been to theaters where that has happened, and those are a couple of stories coming up. But
Oh, cool.
I just remember I was so enthralled. I don't even know what. There could have been the hottest woman in the world in front of me, and to be sincere, I wouldn't have noticed. I would have been. I'm like, this movie's amazing, and it's like, and it still is amazing to me. So.
Well, and I like the fact that it seemed to connect with sort of your dad kind of in a way that was like took him back to being a kid again almost.
Oh yeah. I remember, my dad would always, he would always go like, he'd always grab me and go, "Did you see that?" It's like, my dad was reacting the way we would watching boxing matches. "Oh my God, you see that guy take that hit?" And it's like, "Yeah, down right here."
Did
It
you
was
see that thing absorb that dog? Oh, man.
yeah, pretty much. My dad was flipping because we never saw shit like that. We never saw, think about it. Like, what? Just in 70, 77, Star Wars came out, and people could look back and laugh at that all they want. Go ahead and laugh, because that's the movie that, with John Dykstra and company, that changed special effects, practical effects, and whatnot forever. And so it was just, you know, Rob Bottin's work was just beyond impressive. Still is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you still look at that movie, and I guess with the exception of that one moment that everybody seems to point out where the tentacle comes out of the ground at the end and takes the dynamite, everything else is like perfect. And I don't even mind that tentacle part too much, honestly.
No, I don't. I mean, you could forgive it considering all the things that they did. And I know if people listen to my show where I interviewed Jeremy X. Wagner, that you can find on Twitter, what a phenomenal guy. You know, he has part, I think he has, I know he, I think he's trying to get a piece of that set that they had when they were developing the miniature, but he has the helicopter blades.
Jeez.
Exactly. He is that cool. I mean, his cool factor's through the roof. You know, he's a big collector of Jaws and The Thing. And oh, I saw Jaws in theater too, but and that was great. But it didn't have the impact like The Thing did for me. So.
Yeah, you know, I saw the thing on a cropped VHS tape. Well, actually, they played it on cable, and they cut stuff out, but not as much as you'd think. But I saw it for the first time proper on VHS, and of course, it was back when it was pan and scan. So, watching it on DVD for the first time in the proper aspect ratio was pretty enlightening, and it was like when I watched Pulp Fiction for the first time in the proper aspect ratio. I was like, "Oh my God, there's like so much stuff going on in this frame, and they cut so much of it out. Why do they do that? I hate that."
Yeah, because when you cut it out, you're 1,000 miles from nowhere, man.
Exactly. Hey, fuck you, Palmer.
Ain't going with him. I ain't going.
Cut the bullshit. Well, you know, Bill, I'm thinking to myself here, I've been asking this question, like, what do I, like, you know, up until recently, what was my reason for going to the movies? Because I'm one of those guys who would go to the movies by himself. You know,
I've done
because,
that and I don't care.
yeah, it's like I don't have any sort of, I don't get self-conscious about it or anything. It's just like I just, something I like to do. And, but sometimes it's like I feel like you get with a crowd that they are being obnoxious when they should be, kind of. And it's kind of, I sit there, I'm like, yeah, sometimes I really hate going to the movies because you don't know if you'll get stuck with some jackass or a bunch of jackasses in the theater.
Yep. Midweek matinee. That's the safe bet, man.
Yeah, you know what I do, or what I did, and what I'll resume doing once it's determined safe to do so. I would go like right after work
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
on a weeknight. You're usually the only one or one of the only ones in the theater. It works out pretty nicely. But you know, it's like, jeez, for as misanthropic as I can feel at times, I really just like the big screen. I love the sound, you
Oh,
know.
yeah.
And you know, the comfy seats, even though the theaters in my area seem to have the temperature down at like 35 degrees throughout the year. I just like that experience of I can't watch something on my TV at home and have it be the same as seeing it on a screen that's like 20 times as big. You know, so that's like, I think that's really why I like going to the movies. You know, is that experience kind of, you're kind of surrounded by, you know, you're in the dark, you're surrounded by the image, and the sounds, and hopefully just people's reactions to things. But that's what I like about it. You know, and I just wanted to make that as a general comment. Because you know, there's a, it's not a horror movie, but I'm going to make a
Oh,
case.
man.
I'm going to make a case for it as sort of being of interest to people who might like horror movies. And I want to give a shout out to the Midtown Cinema in Harrisburg, which is where I saw this movie, along with a bunch of other stuff like Stoker, Under the Skin, and It Follows, among a bunch of other genre films.
If you say frozen, I'm gonna punch you in the face.
Well, let it go, Bill. Let it go. No, the film that I saw there that was like it seemed like a big deal to me was Killer Joe.
Killer Joe.
Yeah, who told you about Killer Joe, Bill?
Shit, do I? Oh my God, yeah, you did.
Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey, man, eating that chicken.
Yeah.
That, yeah, this is one of those non-horror horror movies.
It's dark,
Oh
it's
yeah.
funny, but it's mostly dark, yeah. And William Friedkin did a great job with it. That's a
Oh, he did, man. He did.
seems
Phenomenal.
like it seems like kind of an unlikely thing to come from him, but he did Bug a couple years before, which
Yep.
was also
Phenomenal.
based off a Tracy Letts stage play.
Yep.
But this was cool because I'd seen some trailers for the movie. So it had my interest based on that. And here's the thing, going back to being Jack Villeni here, the Midtown Cinema, this was the NC-17 cut of the film that they were playing. And I think this is the first and only time I've gone to a theater and been able to watch an NC-17 movie because of the way that rating is, it's usually kind of a death knell. You
Yeah,
know, it's
yeah.
like, unless you're Paul Verhoeven and Showgirls or something like that. But, this was like the first and only time I saw an NC-17 movie in the theater. And it was just kind of awesome for that reason. As it does have that sort of weird, granted, it's kind of an antiquated taboo feeling because, at that point, the rating system was kind of like, hey, people are already, TV was starting to push boundaries.
Right.
And other things of that nature, but it was still really cool to sit in there with a bunch of other people and just watch this thing unfold because it's very much this it's like a classier version of a Rob Zombie film, I would
Ah,
say.
I like that.
You sort of got these trailer trash characters and you've got these sadistic characters and it all ties into family and it's very very sick-minded and the places it goes are just fascinating. I haven't watched it in a while, but I just remembered loving that experience and just kind of admiring the fact that I had this. It was nice to have this art house theater near me that would be willing to bring in something like that and take the chance on it. Whereas, a mainstream multiplex would be much less likely to do that. So.
Yeah, you reminded me, my first NC-17 theater experience was, I think, the first movie to get the designation, which was Henry and June.
Oh, you saw that in the theater?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All
I
right.
did, man. I did. But,
Well,
what? Go ahead.
how was that?
Oh, Henry June's great. I'm a big fan of Henry Miller. His writing and all. And you got me that killer biography. I think you did. It just so it was great. It was great seeing him on screen and personified on screen with Anais Nin and his wife who on the one hand did him in, but also helped him grow. So that was awesome.
And Fred Ward was a really
Yep.
underrated actor. I kind of miss him because
Yeah.
he showed up in a bunch of good stuff around that couple year period, like in the late 80s and early 90s. He's,
Adventures of Remo Williams, man. That
well,
shit.
and fucking Tremors too.
Tremors, yeah.
And he was in Naked Gun 33 and a third, so there's
That's
that too.
right. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't in this next movie, and you're talking about crowds, and my mom went to this one, so that was good. It was also 1982, and we all went as a family. I forgot what theater. It was one of the big ones with an even bigger screen, and it was for Poltergeist.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Packed to the gills. Audience was cool as hell. Everybody was screaming and freaking out. Everybody, we were all. Everyone was going nuts, and it was like a roller coaster ride of watching this movie. And so I had such a great experience. Loved the film, loved all the creepiness and the special effects and the comedy elements. But you get an idea of where I was. Let's see, I was 17 at that point. And so, if you don't know the movie, and yeah, this is another spoiler alert, sort of, but it doesn't really matter. But they're in this community that was fabricated, and it was once a graveyard. And what happened was the company that bought the place moved the headstones, but they didn't move the bodies. So the whole everything's haunted. And at one point they're having a pool put in, and it's pouring rain. Jo Beth Williams, who's playing the mother, she slides down into this pool. She's in the deep section, which is like, it looks like more than 10 feet. And out from the bottom of this mud pool that she's in, the bodies come up from their graves. And I remember going, "That can't happen. They're buried at 6 feet. This is wrong. They blew it. They made a mistake." And that's where my assholishness towards mistakes in movies was born. And I'm like, "Well, they can't have a basement in their homes, none of them, because then they would be hidden bodies." So it's like, eh. So anyway, and the weird part is I bought the movie, I would say 7, 8 years ago, first time, because I wanted to see it again. And I put it in, and I'm like, "Man, these scenes are really long. Man, they're drawn out. Man, this isn't as exciting as it was when I was in the theater with all those damn people."
So do you think the theatrical experience might have like helped influence your take on that, Bill? You're swept up in the experience.
Yep, yeah. Swept up in the herd mentality of it all.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've had that happen to me before. It's kind of like you're all into it, and then like you rewatch something and you're by yourself, and it's like totally different. Yeah.
The best example is Rocky Horror Picture Show. If you watch you watch that piece of shit alone, it's like really, it's like good, a long
good luck.
Night.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, Bill, I don't know if I'm going to talk about my bad experiences, because most of them are just like, I made the decision to pay money to see these movies. So it's kind of like, it's not really a good theater going experience story. So
I have those too. I'm leaving those out.
Yeah, maybe that'll be an article for Crash Palace at some point.
That sounds good. Yeah, because I only have one movie left.
Well, you know what, then I'll cap my recollections with this one, which was a bit recent.
Well, you go last, so you got two more.
Okay, well, all right, I'll do two.
Damn it.
Well, let me, okay.
Think about it, well, Johnny. I'll entertain the people. It's like, this is your lobby break. Please go to the lobby and come back to the podcast.
Let's go out to the lobby. Let's go out to the lobby.
We're going
to
get sued.
Well, you know,
good luck. Good luck getting money out of us.
Well, you know, Bill, here's something just like in general that I kind of like about the movie going experience. Because there are people out there or groups, you know, that take a particular interest in preservation, you know. It's like, you know, let's get, even if it's a digital projection, let's do like a festival of a certain type of movie. And there's this event that has happened pretty much annually for the last 5 or 6 years called Splatterfest at the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville.
Yep.
And I've been lucky enough to go there. I think I've done it 3 times
nice.
Over the course of the past couple of years. But it's a really, these guys go all out with, it's like 5 movies, starts at around 7 and it wraps up at some ungodly hour. It wraps up at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. But before that, and the Colonial Theater is really nice. They have they built an addition onto it a couple years back. So there's a brand new theater with a brand new lobby and concession stand. And there's like a private meeting room up on the balcony. And then you have like the old, I think, 1913 theater on the other side of the building, which is awesome. That's where I've watched the Splatterfest movies at.
Nice.
But they do this thing with a local restaurant where they, you know, if you pay a little extra for a VIP admission, which gives you the movies and it gives you some snacks and it gives you this huge meal that this local restaurant makes with an Italian theme to it.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. It's kind of like a buffet thing. So that starts an hour before the festival of film, and they do like door prizes and stuff like that. The first year I did it, I won the scored a Cannibal Holocaust on vinyl. So I was like, that was pretty cool.
Damn.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, I put it on the floor at one point while we were watching a
Oh, I
movie.
remember this story.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
I think someone, like, you know, because you can bring a beers in there. I think someone like spilled beer on the floor, so like it got all the record plays fine, but the actual sleeve got all stained and warped from my naivete. So,
Just like your life, Johnny.
you know, that is a good summary there, actually. But no, I mean, this is just I sort of wanted to shout out to the Colonial Theater and the people who do Splatterfest, just because it is an awesome event. And I've seen movies I haven't seen before, and I've seen movies that I've only watched by myself, and it's a totally different experience with a crowd, you know. And a lot of the people who are there know what they're getting into, and they're already fans of this, and they love some of these movies and how bad they are or how good they are. So it's sort of a, I don't know, it's sort of a nice conflagration of sensibilities and, you know, just that whole atmosphere. It's a beautiful theater. It's got a balcony. Like inside the actual theater, there's a balcony where you can sit up and watch from up on high. So it's really cool. So I've always loved that event. And yeah, it's another reason to support your local independent theaters too.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, here's my last one, Johnny.
All right.
This is one I actually used to teach in class when I was a professor at a university, because I'd have students do a movie review because they were always like, "Yeah, I can't wait to do it." And then they would come to me crying like, "This is so hard." I'm like, "Yes, it is." And they didn't get that. And you weren't there to show them the right way to do it, Johnny. But
Oh, shucks, Bill.
It's the summer of 1999.
Oh.
And I forgot what theater I'm in, but I'm in with my dear friend. At the time, we were a couple, but my dear friend, Cheryl Betts, and we went to see a movie called The Blair Witch Project. And
Ah.
what's interesting about it is the crowd was light. There was where we sat, and I'll never forget it because I used this in teaching. There was a family of four, about two rows in front of us. Mom, dad, and two squirts. And to the right of us, two teen girls. And I was like, if they're going to be assholes during this movie, I'm gonna crush them, you know. But I didn't have to. But the interesting thing was the movie starts, and everybody, heard, the buzz was going on really big about this. It was viral before viral was a thing. And we're watching this, and it was really funny because the movie ends, and as it's going, I'm sitting there. Cheryl's practically ripping my arms out of my socket. She's like, "We're not going anywhere until the house lights come on." The family in front of us, the father goes, "That was sad." And the two teenage girls next to us are laughing their asses off, going, "That fucking sucked." We all saw the same movie, yet we all have a different experience. And my experience was the filmmakers, the great Eduardo Sanchez and Daniel Myrick, they played on my childhood fears. See how I have this all working around? And
Good job, Bill. Good
thank
job.
you, thank you. That's why I do my best. And which was always like disembodied voices, again with those sounds. And it's like, I know it's there, I can't see it. What is it? And it can hurt me, but again, there's nothing I could do about it because there's no like physical element to it. And so with the disembodied voices and all that stuff, it really got to me. It really got to me. And so that was really an interesting experience, how we all felt it in different ways. And that's how movie going is. I mean, it so it's crazy, and sometimes you have that mob, that mob thing, and you can get caught up in a movie,
Oh, yeah.
and sometimes it just isn't there. I know it wasn't there when I saw Fire Walk With Me, by David Lynch, 30 people in the theater, and when it was over, there was only three of us left, and I
Their
still love it.
loss,
Yep,
their
and now it's
loss.
a Criterion, film. And everybody's like, "What the hell is this crap?" And I'm like, "You don't know." But I
It's
just
mind-blowingly brilliant is what it is, yeah.
agreed. And so that was it. That was, there's a five, because I talked about somebody other. I talked about Get Out before, and my experience with that, and so Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, Bill, and I might have talked about this one on the show before, but hey, I'll talk about it again because I think it's appropriate. My friend and I, my best friend and I, were in New York City a couple years back. We were checking out the Cold Waves Festival.
Oh, okay. I think I remember this.
Yeah, which is a like an industrial electronic music festival that previously had just the previous editions had just been in Chicago because that's where it originated.
Right.
But that year they decided to branch out to NYC and Los Angeles. So, since New York City is closer for us than going to Chicago, let alone Los Angeles, we made the drive up to New York. And I think it was like the second day of the festival or something like that, or it's like we're walking around New York, we're visiting certain places, stopping to get lunch and dinner and trying to find record stores or bookstores or whatever to peruse. And I'm like thinking to myself, we're in New York City, and we have all of these movies that we wouldn't be able to see, in the section of Pennsylvania where we live typically. I was trying to think of something, and the only thing I could think of was the fact that the newest Predator movie had opened up like the weekend, like that day or something like
Which
that.
one?
It was the Shane Black one. It was just called The Predator from a couple years back, which a lot of people didn't like, but I did.
Oh, I didn't. I haven't seen it yet.
I don't think Palko liked it, and he's a huge, he's a huge fan of
Yeah,
Predator.
Palco did pretty much what I did at Palco Designs. We were both, as soon as we heard it was going to be a CGI thing, we were like, "Fuck that!" Just.
So then this idea pops into my head while we're out walking around. I'm like, hey, there's this movie I've heard a lot of people talking about called Mandy. And if that's not playing somewhere in New York, I'm like, I would be surprised. So we, I think, went on Fandango and found, I think, one theater that was playing it close to within walking distance or train distance of or wherever of where we were. So it was playing at one of the IFC centers. I think there's at least two there. So we went, we bought our tickets, and we walk up to the guy at the ticket taker, basically, and he looks at the tickets and says, "Ah, Mandy, this movie will change you." So, we both have a good laugh about it. We walk up to the theater, which is kind of this interestingly shaped pod of a thing, kind of with, I feel like one of the walls was kind of curvy, so it was more like a teardrop almost than like a square shape that we're kind of used to, or a shoebox, I guess. So we found some seats and we sat down, and we were there kind of early, so people were filing in, and even after the movie started, there were people still filing in trying to find a seat. I think there might have been 50 seats, and people were literally like sitting next to each other because you couldn't put the obligatory one seat between you and the stranger because there were so many people there. And it was just a really, I will say that the movie wasn't what I expected it to be, especially as it got going, and especially considering how much I loved Beyond the Black Rainbow. My perception might have been a bit skewed. I was like, oh, this will be just like, it'll be Beyond the Black Rainbow but with Nicolas Cage or something like that. And there's a little of that going through it, but it's something completely different at the same time. And I liked how it built up, and I felt like everybody was kind of getting in on this collective hypnosis, with the weird lighting schemes, with the weird things that are done with technique. And then when the film flips in the second act into something else, people were like getting into it. I think people were like hooting and laughing during the chainsaw duel scene that happens near the end.
Jeez.
People were really getting into it. I think they were getting behind the Nicolas Cage's grandly over the top perform. It went from being very nuanced to being very over the top. And it was just like, by the time it was over, I was just kind of high off the experience of the whole thing. You just felt like you'd been on this very, very unique, one of a kind journey. You'd seen, I'd seen vengeance films before, but none of them had been done quite in the way that Mandy had been. And I think that was, it was kind of nice that this happened. It was this serendipitous thing of us being in the right place at the right time to be able to experience this movie. And that was a great thing. It just added to the whole, experience of being in the city again, which I hadn't been for many years. And it just was another kind of feather in the cap of things that I'll fondly remember from that weekend. So,
Awesome, man.
yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about going to a theater, man.
Yeah, and personally, Bill, I'm looking forward to when we can go back to theaters and seeing stuff on the big screen. And I know you and Cheryl like going to see stuff together too, so.
Yeah, we do once in a while. She picks movies that I'm like, I don't want to see that. like, hey, do you want to see this horror movie? No, not that piece of crap. You didn't see it yet. Oh, I know it's a piece of shit. I don't need to go.
Well, you sometimes go. Because you have that theater that's right down the road from you, so.
Yeah, we're between two actually, both technically within walking distance, which is great. And, which is cool. And the last experience we had was the negative crowd experience with us. Not that the crowd was negative, the crowd was laughing at the screen, like this is stupid. And
It
it was.
was.
And we were there with the great Sean Scott, and it's his birthday today that we're recording the show, man. So
Happy birthday, Sean.
happy birthday, Sean, and to all the cool souls at Banter Cider that are still keeping it going. You could
Yeah.
get takeout cider, Johnny. How's that?
I wish you could FedEx me some of that new stuff that they got, the what, the
Strawberry lemonade, man. It's awesome.
strawberry lemonade. I saw that and I'm like, why don't you have a location in Harrisburg? Come on.
I told them that already, man. I'm doing my best.
I know, I appreciate it, Bill. I think every time I come there, I say something to that effect. I try to say it loud enough so they hear, but yeah.
I'm working on it, man. Working on it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's scream out time.
Yeah, let's scream out to some people. I'm gonna eat some popcorn while you scream out to them,
You
Bill.
do that because these are people that I would love to sit in a theater with. And that's true. These are wonderful souls that you could find on Twitter. And I'm going to take a swig of my coffee.
That's damn good coffee, Bill.
Yeah. I wish I had some cherry pie right now. A hot cup of Good Morning America, as Harry Dean Stanton said in Fire Walk with Me. Here we go. Melanie McCurdy. She's a chaos coordinator, swear wolf. Her spirit animal is rabid. And she was in
Nice.
TOK2, if you didn't know, the Orphan Killer 2, the sequel. And she writes, and in fact, she has a new book out now called Hunters and Humans. And it's on Amazon, so you can get that. She's phenomenal. For some reason, she has Bled Astray here. I guess that's another site for another place for her too. But that Bled Astray is also on Twitter. She's in Canada, and she's amazing, and we love her. And after that, we have the great people at Dread Central
Yeah.
for news, interviews, contests, and more for horror fans around the world. And you can contact them at info@dreadcentral.com or go right to their website at dreadcentral.com. Another great soul from Canada who I love, my sister from another mister, Real Jilly G. And she is on Twitter, of course. And she is a Spartan warrior. She's a strong survivor, writer, reader. She loves movies. She's big in the horror community. She supports indie film. And she's all for the horror family and equality. And you could find her great writings, her great musings, her great introspection at crimsonquintessence.com. Mandy Mortem, and that is M Mortem with two M's at the end. It's an 18 plus account, aren't they all? A morbid minded writer of horror stories into metal, memes, and anything odd or dark themed. How's that? She's out of
Nice.
Florida, and you could also check her out on her YouTube channel, but she's excellent. My Little Rascal, number one. You know who that is, right? We love horror, we love filmmaking, and we support indie film, and they make their own damn movies, and they're excellent. And they're out of Lancaster, PA, and I hope to visit them when this is all over. Got to have them on the show. And
Yeah.
Lisa is, she's always showing like these amazing meals that she makes, and I just
Yes,
have to
God.
taste her food, man. I just have to taste it.
Manja,
Yeah, you know it.
Bill, manja.
Tommy Doyle, who's he? Tommy Doyle, 47. As he says, I was a good kid. I got babysat by Laurie Strode till one night Michael Myers came and changed me forever. I won't stop till I stop Michael. And he's out of Haddonfield, Illinois, if you didn't know. Nah, he's cool. He's always posting these like great things, like pick one out of these four movies, and it's like, oh, you know, it's just like if you had to, one of those deals. And it,
Yeah, I've seen those posts. They're pretty
yeah,
cool.
it's tough, and I always have to call my therapist after I make a decision. The Eye of Solaris. Who's that? That's I Solaris, EYE, of course. Stranger, pause as you pass by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, you soon will be. Prepare yourself to follow me. How is that? Very cool. Very cool. And that person, the Eye of Solaris, is living in the sarcophagus, if you didn't know. Two more, Johnny.
All right.
Where the Scary Things Are. Where's that? At Scary Horror Cast. A horror cast hosted by Halo Girl 22, Monster Mash Ken, Casey Space, and with reviews by CJ Zissi, we know Chris, and with special guest host forget it, Haro S Reviews, the official podcast of Promote Horror, the last house on the left. That's where they're located. So check them out. They are always awesome. And finally, the band who came to Stroudsburg, and by the time I found out, it was way too late for me and I couldn't get tickets. Butcher Babies.
Ah.
Yeah, they're supposedly on tour now and in May. I don't know if things have changed because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
But the band members, Heidi the Butcher, Carla Harvey, Henry Fleury, and Chase the Drums. And they're out of LA and they are fantastic. And I want to thank Peter Kidder for helping get me turned on to them. And you could follow Peter Kidder on Twitter as well because he's super cool. And he is. And so that's my scream outs, Johnny.
You know, Bill, that's another thing I'm looking forward to once this blows over, which might not be for a while. I'm looking forward to live music again.
Yeah, I hear that, man.
And it was supposed to be a pretty good like March and April and May for me in terms of live shows, and now all of them are either canceled or postponed. So I'm like, okay.
Sorry, Jenny.
Hey, you know, artists are finding ways to circumvent this stuff. Like I watched a live stream of a musician I like a couple weeks back, and it was, you know, it's not quite the same, but you know, if that's as close as we're gonna get in the time of quarantine, shoot, I'll watch that, you
Yeah,
know?
absolutely. And man, I thank anybody who's doing the best that they can to help entertain the bored masses, because a lot of
God,
people are
yeah.
bored, but we're alive and so many people are suffering. So
Yeah.
my cousin Denise, she's a nurse and she contracted COVID-19. Luckily, she's better now,
Good.
which is fantastic to hear. So,
Yeah.
but Johnny, so where can people find you?
You can find me right here, Billy. Ho!
Hey.
You can find my writing on CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy's a nice guy. You can also find my writing over at 1428elm.com. And you can find me on the cesspools of social media on Twitter and Letterboxd. Letterboxd isn't bad, but Twitter's pretty awful. At Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can follow me on Facebook by appointment if you know my real name. So there you go.
Ooh, I like that. And you can follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace or go to crashpalaceproductions.com to get stories from Johnny, reviews anyway, at least, and also links to this show and more. This show is on Spotify, The Last Knock, and iTunes as well. And if you're bored and you want to read something, my Kink Noir erotic crime thriller series is available on Amazon. Just punch in my last name, PRYSTAUK. It'll pop up and enjoy. They're free on Kindle.
Yep, and they're highly worth your time. So if you have no reading material during the quarantine and you have the time to read and you like to read, pick them both up and read them.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny. I appreciate that. And I'd like to say hi to my new editor, and that's Creatively Angel on Twitter. And she gets the manuscript this week for the third book, Debauchery in the Series. So, yeah, thank you. We'll see. And I'm working on a fourth.
Yay.
Woohoo!
Bill, I want some Hollywood big shot to be like, I want to adapt all these books. Total creative control, NC-17 movie here.
You know, Bloodletting was supposed to be made into a film, right?
I do, yeah, you told me. Because it
That
was a script first,
yeah, it was
wasn't
a
it?
script first. It won a whole bunch of it won a great award. It got me an agent. I had a independent studio out of New York that was really interested. The guy loved the story. They were going to go full speed ahead, and then the bottom dropped out. They never got the money, and that was that. So I'm like, screw it. I'm writing it as a novel, and here we are.
No, it's a great book, Bill. That and Punishment. So I
Thank
tell
you.
you this every time I talk to you off mic, but I'll say it now. I'm really looking forward to Debauchery.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. It wasn't an easy write, man. This is you'll find out why when you read it, but
See, this is like making me more excited for it, so, you know.
Well, the only thing about it that is traditional in the whole noir category and the hard-boiled detective category is the private detective is male. I wanted to write from a male perspective because I'm a guy. I didn't want to, like, I'm doing enough different things. But what happens to him in the book never happened to any leading male private detective, hard-boiled, thing anywhere ever. So it's new ground. New ground.
Excellent.
I hope
Excellent.
it's excellent. We'll see.
Well, I'm looking forward to it,
I
so.
write, you decide.
Oh.
On that note, Johnny.
All right, Bill, it's always in the audience's hands, is it not? Yeah.
Yep. Go to your theater when this is all over and enjoy a movie and get some popcorn, damn it.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
See you, Bill.
All right, bye.